sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everyone. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a program about sex and happiness. And, of course, I'm thrilled to be back and love having you back. Today, this portion of the show is brought to you by Zestra, a female enhancement product that I'll be talking about a little bit later. My guest today is an interesting person. He's a writer who's creating a new brand called Muscle Heart, which is being built by him in order to help people become more emotionally available. That is quite a mission. And my question for all of you is, how emotionally available are you? I mean, it is something to look at. A lot of times people are protecting themselves from something. And I feel the older that they get, the more protection they put on, like with each failed relationship or however many times their child hurt them, or maybe with past hurts from family and things that happen in life, I find people to put on a lot of protection. And that's certainly something that I go to work on. And I just ask you to look as we talk together about how you are in terms of unprotecting yourself, taking the armor off. Now, the reason I asked him to be my guest today is because of a blog post that I saw that I thought was amazing. And it was called Ride the Lightning. And of course, it was about passion and adventure in sex life. So we're going to touch on that today, too. My guest is Clint Piatelli. Clint, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lori. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And as I said, I invited you on the show because of this great post you wrote. And then I asked you if I could post it on my website. I liked it so much. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the adventures that a person can have in their sex life. And then we'll move into how people can become more emotionally available. How did you find for yourself a way to create adventure and passion in your sex life, Clint?
You know what, Lori? I got in touch with what really turned me on. I went inside myself and I really just got in touch with what made my blood boil. And I would share that with the women I was with and explore that with them and look at the whole thing as a sort of adventure, trying to find where your real passions lie, what really turns you on, and just delving into them and running with them and not judging them or critiquing them, or even if you want to understand them, that's fine, but not even so much understanding them, but just knowing yourself to the point where I know this turns me on, I know this is exciting to me, it's a lot of fun, and throwing a lot of play into your sex life, because sex should be a lot of fun. It's a beautiful experience that should be an awful lot of fun, as well as very deep and emotional.
Now, of course, that begs the question, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a pretty vanilla household in Boston, and you know, nothing, you know, sex was never talked about in my house. It was pretty much taboo to talk about sex or anything. So there was nothing. There was a lot of repression in the house across the board with a lot of things, but nothing remarkable, I'd say, or unremarkable about it.
But I ask the question because so many people find it so difficult to just straightforward talk about what turns them on. So yeah, that's why I'm trying to say, where did you grow up? What's your earliest memory of saying to a potential sex partner, hey, honey,
let's try this?
Yeah, let's try this. I would really like that.
It was actually my first girlfriend, but but I was not really comfortable in my own skin about it. And I hadn't embraced my true passion. I knew what I was into, Laurie. I mean, I knew what I was into when I was six, quite frankly. But I knew what I was into when I was 16. But, you know, being able to share that at that age was pretty scary. So I would share it. But if it was a dead end, I wouldn't pursue it. I wouldn't communicate it. I wouldn't talk about it. It wasn't until I got older that I started to explore it with women, be more open about it, and be more communicative about it.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying to you. So around when would you say you started talking about it and you started to have this? Because I want people, my goal in this is to let people know, hey, you can talk about your sex life with someone. You could talk about what turns you on, but at what point do you do that? At what point? Here's where I'm coming from when I ask you this. I obviously have students in my Tantra Sacred Sexuality classes who often are not able to express what they want or what they would like to a partner. Many of them don't even know what they want. So that's what part of the reason they come to me. But I mean, after all is said and done, I've had people, men, say to me, I would never tell my partner I want to be hung upside down and flogged and then receive fellatio. I'm so afraid of what she would say to me.
Sure. Yeah, that's why people don't do it, Laurie. A lot of it's the fear of rejection and the fear of the judgment around what you're into. It's huge. It's incredibly huge. It's like an epidemic.
So that's why I'm asking you to give us some real life examples of, well, I said this to this potential partner, to my first girlfriend or to my second or third girlfriend, and I told her on the second date, or I told her after we were going steady, like, when would be the timing, and did you receive rejection, or was it just a go? Did you have to talk them into it?
Was it just a go? That's a beautiful expression. I'll tell you, for me, Laurie, what I find is that if I'm comfortable with what I'm into, and I don't necessarily even have to talk about it, but I tend to attract women who are open to it just from the get go. That's what I found. My experience is that. Practically speaking, on the first date, you can lay hints about what you're into, see what the kind of reaction you get. If they're horrified, if they're receptive. I'm not recommending you do that. You have to feel each person out individually. Let me tell you one thing that I do, very, very practical thing that I do, that I don't really think about. It just sort of happens. If I'm kissing a woman, when I'm kissing a woman on whatever date it is, and we're in bed, and it might not get to sex, but it's going to get to some petting maybe, or some, you know, intimate touching. I will run my fingers across her mouth, lips, and see how she responds to fingers on the mouth. And I will also start putting one finger in her mouth and see how she responds to that. If I get a negative, if I get a rejection of that, it's usually a sign that she's not ready to do this kind of a thing, what I'll often do is talk about it later, like, did you like that? Or usually I can tell if they like it. But it's more if they don't like it, I'll bring up, what about that didn't you like? So a lot of it, Laurie, is communication, risking, taking the risk to do something like that and get a response, because you don't know, ultimately. You have to risk the response from your partner to know if you're going to be able to mesh sexually with this sort of a thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I like that you started with a very low risk thing.
Totally.
You said, put your fingers in her mouth and see how she responds to that. I mean, you could have said, put my fingers in her ass and see how she responds.
I mean, you know, that's probably a little bit more daring. But the mouth is something that you explore, you know, the first thing you do with somebody is kiss them usually. So the mouth is sort of an easy place to go. I remember one date I had, I was at a bookstore or in a coffee house with a woman, and I went around the bookstore and I grabbed some books that I was into. You know, I'm into all the types of topics. One of the topics I'm into is sex. So I bought a book that had some erotic, kinky photographs in it, and we looked at it together, and this wasn't something I planned. It just sort of happened. The book was there, and I grabbed it. I took the risk, and we looked at pictures together, and we actually had a discussion on the first date about this stuff. So I got a sense from the first date that this woman was open and available to this sort of a thing. And that was wonderful, because when you find that out, it opens the door to start exploring things with the woman right away. So
I like that. I think we have to make that a technique. I like that. Having books.
The book. Break out a book. Look at a book together. Find out what kind of book she likes, what kind of book he likes, either one. That was, and again, it wasn't planned. It just sort of happened.
I mean, I just spoke with a man recently who told me that he started dating a woman who had been his friend for a really long time, but he had never been intimate with her. And then he said that when they discussed the possibility of going out and possibly becoming more intimate, she asked him things like, did you see the movie The Secretary? Did you see the movie this and that? And so he said no or yes, whatever he said. And then he said that what happened for them, like very early on in the sex life part, was the only thing that she wanted was to be spanked.
Okay.
And dominated. Yep. And spanked and dominated. And he said it didn't do anything for him. He said he wouldn't have minded if that was occasionally something that they did, but there was never a time when she could be sexually stimulated unless it was a situation like that. Yep. He said even he brought her to his boat one day. They were going to go rowing or something, I don't know. And she saw all the ropes in the boat, and she said, oh, good, are you going to tie me up in the boat? And he said, no, we're going to...
No, we're going to go for a row, damn it. I'm not going to get kinky on you.
So he said that nothing else would turn her on, and I said, well, you really didn't get turned on by that? And he said, no, I couldn't take a steady diet of that. That's just like too much of a scene every time. So I'm saying this to you because sometimes people need to read the signs of another person and see if their tastes even mesh. And I think it's really important what you said, communication is key.
Yeah, and key, and right, reading signs. And something else I find, Lori, too, is even if you discover that you're both into this, and you may be into it more than he is or she is, what happens a lot of times too is that the person on the other end who's not as comfortable with this, most of the women I've opened this sort of thing up to I've been the first guy they've been with that's been into this sort of thing, and what happens sometimes at one point is that my partner will start to overthink what they like and start judging it and criticizing it. And I can tell, because the body doesn't lie. If I'm with a woman and she likes what I'm doing, the body can't lie. So I will be able to sense, if I'm paying attention, and I pay very close attention, I'll be able to tell if they really like it or not. And so what will happen is sometimes later in the relationship, there'll be the woman might get uncomfortable because she likes it too much, and then she'll start thinking, well, maybe there's something wrong with me because I like this sort of a thing. I never liked it before. What are you doing to me type of thing? But that's okay. That's, again, back to communication, Lori. Back to communication. Really, you really have to get comfortable with this for it to move forward on any level.
Yes, and you said you're very comfortable in your skin, it sounds like. So totally. It makes it very easy for a woman that's with you to get comfortable in her skin as well. And I don't think as much as I know you, I don't know that you're necessarily in a kink scene. Like, I don't know that you go to fetish balls and things like that. I mean, maybe you do. Maybe that's part of the conversation. But I would say to people listening, because I know a lot of my listeners are into many different things, if you go to fetish and you might have a new partner who you didn't meet at fetish, mm-hmm. You need to communicate that to the partner as well.
Yes.
Like, these are some of the things I'm into. Yep. So that a little ways down the pike, you're not totally freaked out by who I am. I didn't misrepresent myself.
That's correct. That's very important. That's why I always find that it's different with every person. You start to get a sense for when this topic might come up and when it can be explored based on the individual, based on your relationship, based where they're at, what their maybe sexual experiences, the chemistry you have between the two of you. It's always different. But yeah. And I recommend too, if you're into, I've been to fetish balls and stuff by myself and with a partner. And let me tell you, they're a lot of fun either way, but they're much more exciting with a partner.
That's great. Thanks for saying that. That's a hot tip. Well, we're going to take a break here. And if you just tuned in, I'm speaking with Clint Piatelli, who's a writer, and he's creating a brand called Muscle Heart, and you can find out more about it at muscleheart.com. And it's spelled exactly the way it sounds, muscle, MUSCLE, heart, HEART.com. He's specifically creating this brand to help people become more emotionally available. So when we come back, we'll find out a little bit more about this part. the emotionally available part, and any other tips that he has to give us about having a really adventurous and great sex life. So stay tuned. My question for people right now is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or maybe you know women or a woman who could use this, because many women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they'd like. So I want to tell you about Zestra, because Zestra was developed to meet this much-needed option for women. Zestra is safe and a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts free, fresh, and safe from light. And with application of Zestra, it starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes. And at about 10 minutes, there's something called the Zestra Rush. And that can last up to about 45 minutes. The great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. Now, I'm somebody who believes that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. That's why I do this show, in case you hadn't noticed. So I believe that men and women deserve sexual satisfaction. So if you're a woman who isn't getting that kind of arousal response that you want, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please remember to say you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show. We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. And today I'm speaking with Clint Pietelli, who I knew before I interviewed him, who has been blogging for a while, and whose blog, Ride the Lightning, caught my eye because it was a very passionate adventure of sex life. He was talking to people honestly about his sex life in this blog post, and then I ended up posting it also on my website, butterflyworkshops.com, and I was very excited to start collaborating with Clint Pietelli, who is my guest today. So, Clint, you gave some really good tips there in the last segment about when to start talking to people, communicating with people, and trying different things with a new partner and starting slow, taking risks. Is there anything else about that maybe we left out that you thought of on the break?
Well, I'm sure if you give me enough time, I could talk about this ad infinitum. But at the moment, Laurie, I would just say it's a beautiful. It is. I've had some scenes with women that have been beautiful and passionate and the sexiest, hottest, most erotic, most exciting thing I could possibly imagine. And it wasn't even. I didn't even have to create a huge. You didn't have to create anything huge. You just have to communicate what you're really into and have a partner willing to go there with you and buy into it and enjoy it like you do, or certainly be willing to explore it with you. And amazing things can happen just from that. One of the things I would write down specific things I'd want a woman to say to me while we were doing a scene or making love. And that was really hot. And the woman would read it, and then she'd memorize it, and she'd come back and throw these phrases in there. And I would just, man, like a rocket ship, just explosively beautiful, hot, sexy, erotic stuff. And that's a simple thing to do, man. You know?
There are
trigger words. There are trigger phrases, depending on if you're a top or if you're a bottom or if you're just making love and you're not doing any particular scene. You're just being intimate. Or something you whisper into somebody's ear, like let's say you're out having coffee and there's a trigger. Like the woman, I'll say to the woman, you know what, someday when we're having coffee, out of the blue, just lean over to me, whisper in my ear and say, I can't wait for you to get me home and tie me up. And I'll be out of that coffee shop in about 8 seconds flat. I'm even doing a chew and screw just to get out.
I love your approach as being so direct.
Yeah.
I love that because then someone doesn't have to have guessing. They don't have to worry about getting it right. People are so concerned with their performance.
Yeah.
And this helps people just know exactly what to do, exactly what to say. It takes all that anxiety out of it. And they know that they're that they're in for a wonderful evening with you.
Yep.
And a wonderful time. So it's, I recently had Dr. Ava Cadell on my show.
Oh, yeah? Huh.
And she was saying about this very same subject, that when people don't have a partner, and so there's nobody to practice a lot. She has a book called The Sexy Little Book of Sex Games, and that's why I interviewed her. And I said, well, what do you do if you don't have a partner? She said, keep a journal of all the things you want to do. And then when you meet your partner, hand them the journal.
Wow, what a brilliant idea. And you know what else I find, Lori, too, is once a partner starts to get used to the vernacular you want to speak in and some of the phrases, they start making up their own. So they get creative with it. So they'll add their own things because they'll get a sense of what really turns you on. And they'll start making up their own stuff. And that's when it really takes off, because now it's coming completely from them. You kind of planted a seed, and now the oak is growing, but it's their oak that you get to pick all the fruit from.
Right.
Yeah. So right. That happens a lot too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Well, how did you get interested in helping people to become more emotionally available? Like this concept of muscle heart that you've started, how did that become your passion?
Well, what happened, Laurie, is it became a passion when a woman broke up with me. And I was in love with her, but I didn't know it until after she broke up with me. And I was in shutdown mode after my father died for years. And then I met this woman, and she was wonderful, but I was very distant and very removed and very shut down emotionally. I opened up after she broke up with me. I realized how much I cared about her and how absolutely shut down I had been for a long time. And I decided to start writing about this journey that I was on, this opening, this expansion of my heart and living life from my heart. And when I started doing that, I realized the richness of my previous relationships, all the knowledge, all the wisdom that I had acquired, and also all the experiences I had acquired and what I learned from that and how I could pass that on and how I could share that with people. And what's helped me become a better lover, a better person, a more heartfelt human being. It's all tied together, Laurie. It's all tied together. When you come from your heart, when you're emotionally available, when you can really feel deeply and express those feelings in all the ways you can do that, then your life opens up, especially your romantic life and especially the relationships in your life.
Again, that's like simple wisdom. It's not rocket science what you're talking about, and yet so many people avoid exactly that.
Yep.
Like they avoid telling someone or some other how I really feel about you, how I really want to be held, caressed, loved.
Yep. You know, vulnerability is huge. If you have this air of invulnerability, or if you have this image or this front you put on that you're not vulnerable, sharing that vulnerability is beautiful. That's very important. To tell someone how you feel about yourself, your insecurities, your worries, your fears, that is a huge way to connect to somebody. Very scary to do, but it opens up doors that otherwise stay locked no matter what. You can go through a lot with somebody, but if they never tell you how scared they are, how afraid they are, how much, you know, maybe they don't like themselves or they're lost or whatever is going on inside them that they think is ugly, that they have to hide from the rest of the world. When they share it with you as your lover or even your friend, it opens up an entirely new world. And again, it's not rocket science. It's just honesty and love and communication and being vulnerable with somebody that you care about.
Yeah, yep. It's true. Now, I subscribe to the idea that people attract to them who they need at any given time in their life.
Yep.
Like the kinds of, I don't like the so much the notion of karma. I don't subscribe to that. But I do feel strongly that if I need to see certain things about myself, that's probably the type of people I'm attracting to myself at that particular time. Mm-hmm. Friends, lovers, whatever. And so if you... I have to ask it.
Sure.
as a radio journalist, I have to ask it. So if you were emotionally shut down at a time when you met this person who you cared for so much, wouldn't it stand to reason that as you become more emotionally available, that isn't the kind of person that you would necessarily attract anymore.
Completely.
Because at some point this person had to be also not terribly emotionally available to have been attracted to you at that time.
Correct. That's right. Yep. I subscribe to that too. You're right. Yep. Totally. Yep.
So that possibility or that combination of the two, mm-hmm. when we factor it out, and I'm not putting it under a microscope, but I'm still practically taking a look at it, that might not be the same type of person that you would attract now on the other side of this.
No, correct. That's exactly right, Laura. Yep, yep. I subscribe to that as well.
Yeah. So there are so people need to know that. People need to know sometimes they're heartbroken over someone that they actually purport to love, and they do love, in fact, and it was meant oftentimes to be something that passes through, like a relating that passes through, preparing you for something else in your life, because that's who you were at that time, and the greatest gift you could possibly get is to feel that deeply and then see that that served a purpose in your life, but you need to move on.
Correct. Yep. And I also find, Laurie, too, that you will attract people that either they – let's say I'm very emotionally available. I will also tend to attract people to me that – want more emotional availability. They may not be at the same level of emotional availability that I'm at, but they want more of it. They want more of it. So there's an attraction to the emotional availability that I have that the person feels they want more of. It can be a slippery slope because you don't want to get into a situation where you're pushing somebody into something they're not ready for. You really have to be it's a dance you have to do, and you have to be very like in a physical dance, you have to be very attentive to your partner and you know, lead sometimes and follow and hold them and hold their hand sometimes and do all those wonderful things you do in a dance. But I really aspire to couples that want to work on emotional availability. If they're both willing to open up to it and they're both they both want more of it. They don't have to be in exactly the same place. They just have to want more emotional availability, more passion, more love, more communication, and work together with it. Jump into the fire together.
It's good advice. Very good advice. Well, how can people get in touch with you? Is Muscle Heart the way to do this, going to your blog?
Yes. If you go to my blog, www.muscleheart.com, there's a contact me column on the left where you can enter your email address and you can email me whatever you want. You can also make comments on my posts, which I really encourage people to do. That I like that back and forth type of a thing. You can also find me on Facebook, Clint Piattelli. I'm the only Clint Piattelli on Facebook. And that's how I would recommend getting a hold of me. Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to spell your last name for people.
Super.
It's Clint, like Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
Piattelli, P-I-A-T-E-L-L-I. That's Clint Piattelli.
Yep.
And I recommend that you check this out, especially if you're someone listening who really does have some difficulty in this open communication type of thing. If you're somebody who wants to start opening your heart with an intention to communicate what's on your heart or your playfulness and adventuresomeness in sexuality, then I recommend that you contact Clint. And he has some really down-to-earth suggestions and many, many more on how you can easily start to communicate really what is probably your heart's desire.
Well put. Well put, Laurie. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Clint, thanks for being a guest on my show today. I look forward to some collaborations with you. I was thinking before, just to so people can hear this from me, I was thinking before when you were speaking about some of the playful and adventurous scenes that you've had. You know, I'm into making films these days, so I was thinking, maybe some of his scenes could be the subject matter of my erotic film.
Yeah,
so
sure. I love being on camera, just so you know.
Okay, Clint, thank you so much. Everyone, please stay tuned for my next guest, Dr. Amanda Morgan, who'll be speaking to us about sex education, how important it is on the college level and how important it is for younger people as well. So we'll be right back with Amanda Morgan.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness.
For weeks now, you've been hearing me talk about the Erotic Coast Film Festival and my film Beyond Dinner winning the award for the best short film. And you've been hearing me talk to all these guests that I met while I was there. And you haven't heard that much about the dinner, although in the show I did with Dr. Ava and Nancy Sutton Pierce, we did talk about what was in my film. I want to let you know that the film is about a ritual dinner that I invented called the Gate Dinner. Gate means beyond in Sanskrit. And it's a very sensual 8-course dinner that starts with the forbidden, starts with dessert, and leads its way back around to other foods. But all the foods in the dinner are very, very sensual, very beautifully prepared, and the presentation is amazing. And in this dinner, aside from everybody projecting themselves through a meditation that I do to their highest self, having had boundary exercises prior, the men rotate around the table and they feed various goddesses, all the goddesses that are around the table. And even if you come there with a partner, the partner lets go, doesn't take things so personally, lets the partner rotate around and have a sensual experience with each person that's participating. In this case, it would be men having a sensual experience with different women and then working their way back to their original partner. If this piques your curiosity and interest, I want to let you know that these dinners are now available to you wherever you are in the United States. And what you need is 20 people who would like to participate, and you can get in touch with me at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com if you'd like to host a dinner like this in your part of the world. I would love to come to your and offer one of these dinners to you and your friends, and I know my chef would love to come too. Also, Antonio Tiggs, who you've heard on the show as well, would love to come and paint your servers, so your servers are all gold or all silver or what have you. So we have a little entourage that would like to come and make this such a memorable event for you. Please get in touch with me if you'd like to hear more about it and talk about the details. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to ButterflyWorkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
Well, we're back. And today I have a lot of questions about sexuality education, what people are learning in college about sexuality, which I learned about sexuality through trial and error. I wasn't that good at it. I mean, I think I'm good at sex, but I wasn't that good at finding out what I really needed to know and having satisfying and gratifying experiences. You know, maybe I'll share that later. I don't know. But today my guest is Dr. Amanda Morgan, and she's a health and sexuality educator at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. She has a master's in public health and a doctorate in human sexuality. Dr. Morgan's research interests include eco-friendly sex toys, sexuality education, sustainable living, environmental and reproductive justice issues, which we'll find out a little bit more about those as we go along the show. So welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
I'm so glad to have you on the show. And for people who don't know, I mean, this saga just keeps going on and on and on. I met Amanda Morgan at the Erotico Film Festival in Jamaica, and we instantly bonded, and she is this amazing person. She's a young person who has a doctorate in human sexuality. So, of course, I'm interested in that. Like, Amanda, what got you interested in the subject of sexuality education? Because I think you graduated with a world record, so the youngest doctorate ever. So tell us about that.
Well, I've always kind of been a sex nerd. I mean, since I was little, I was one of those people who was, like, way too curious. And I'd ask my parents all sorts of questions. And I got very lucky because I came from a very open family. So they were okay with me asking questions, okay with nudity and talking about sexuality. And I think I got my dirty sense of humor from my stepdad, who makes very, very awesome sex jokes, still to this day. So I kind of grew up in a family that talked about sex, and I saw that there was this kind of push and pull in our society, like, hey, you know, sex is this fun thing that everybody jokes about and talks about, and we use it to sell things, but we don't really talk about what people are doing, and people don't really talk about their expression. And I kind of saw that at a young age, like, there's something here, you know, there's something magical about this sex thing, but nobody wants to talk about it.
They don't talk about it seriously, so that people could actually learn something.
Yeah, they talk about it in total joking way, usually in a way that doesn't give you any fact-based information. It kind of perpetuates these myths about our sexuality and our sensuality and, you know, what people want and, you know, that size matters. Women always want all these men with big penises and that want to be railed like porn stars. And I mean, there's all sorts of myths that people learn about sex, which in fact aren't really true when you start learning about it. So I ended up in high school, as all of us do, and found myself basically playing sex educator to all of my friends because they had all been raised in families where they couldn't talk about sex. They weren't allowed to ask questions. They weren't allowed to explore, that kind of thing. So there I was at, you know, 15 years old, giving advice to all of my friends. And so I found that they felt comfortable with me. I felt comfortable with the subject. And I was helping people. I was helping them in a way that they weren't getting from anybody else. So I was like, I'm going to be a sex therapist. You know, this is my calling. I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to be a therapist, and I'm going to help people. So I went and I got my counseling degree.
So in high school, you knew that you were going to be a sex therapist.
Yes.
Well, I did the same thing in high school, but they didn't have the category sex therapist back then. So there was no career for me to just jump into. So how lucky you are. How wonderful.
I'm very grateful that I've been given books, and I've had many a mentor who've helped kind of encourage me along this path. Because it's not an easy path. It's not. People assume a lot of things about you if you're interested in sex.
Like,
you know,
what?
You're obviously, there's something wrong with you if you think about sex all the time. And for me, I am a sex nerd. It fascinates me. I think it's so important. It's the reason we are all here, you know? Like, why can't we talk about that? Like, what's so wrong about talking about that? So I ended up getting my counseling degree, and in the process of that, kind of realized that I enjoyed talking about sex more than I liked talking about people's problems. Because with counseling, you're dealing with their family, the way they were raised, all their issues, their depression, and whatever drug issues they might have. And I kind of realized I'm too young to be a therapist quite yet, you know? And so I decided to not go and get my degree in therapy. And instead, I decided to go get my master's degree in public health, which made me an educator. And one thing I learned in all of this is that counselors are educators. You know, you spend so much time with a client basically just trying to tell them that they're normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And once they finally figure out that they're normal and that it's okay for them to have these desires and that they're not alone, so much of their shame and their guilt and their emotional issues and physical manifestations of those issues seems to kind of disappear when they realize that that there's nothing wrong with them. You don't need to know about their mom and their dad and how they learned about sex to help them learn that they are normal and that it's okay for them to be a sexual being.
Yes, it's very well said. Very, very well said how you said that. I mean, it's critical that people get that sex is a very healthy and important functional part of being alive. And
yes.
I think when I was in the corporate world, I read a study that said that men in the corporate world think, well, maybe men out of the corporate world too, but think about sex every 7 minutes. Their mind goes to sex. And I thought, wow, we could use this for something.
Yes, right.
You know, holding men hostage. Anyway, no kidding. But it's true. And so you're performing a service that's very valuable and very necessary and needed since people have been going crazy from desire for as long as time exists.
Yes, it is. It's so empowering for people to realize that we've been having sex for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, because people seem to forget this. They think that they've made up this sex thing, that all their little kinkiness and disposition that they made up, you know, they think that they are the ones who created it, and they didn't. We've had the same holes for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, if not more. So is this
basically what you mean when we say sexuality education? You're educating people that there's a history to it and that they're not the only ones. I mean, I can see what you're doing in a counseling session, but what are you doing when you're educating people like on the college level?
Well, I try to teach them as much as I possibly can in 16 weeks. So I start with the history because I think that's the most important. That normalizes sex. So all of a sudden, all their freak outs and prejudices kind of disappear because they realize, oh, okay, this has been happening forever. And then I talk about their bodies. And so I teach them about anatomy and about the hormonal process and the loops and all the stuff that's going on inside of our body that drives our behavior, that drives our sexuality, that drives our reproduction. And it's amazing how little people know about their bodies. Shocking that so many people don't know why they have ovaries or what testicles do. It's amazing, you know, and it's sad that they didn't learn this in elementary school and that they're learning it in college.
At least they're learning it. I mean,
yes, you know, and they're grateful to learn it, you know, and these are things that they're going to teach their kids. So we go over it in great depth. And then we talk about gender, and we talk about how different cultures look at gender differently. Like America is very binary. We have this kind of male and female thing. And other cultures, they accept three genders, or they accept five genders. And they accept trans people in their society as normal. They don't think twice about it. And in our culture, we still have this problem where part of our brain goes, is that a boy or is that a girl or is that a boy? We struggle with that in our culture. And so yeah. I kind of raise awareness about that and our gender roles and people who are gender neutral or their physical gender does not match their mental gender and that kind of stuff, which blows a lot of my students' minds because they've never been exposed to trans issues before, you know. They might have seen a trans person and just thought that that there's something wrong with that person instead of understanding that that person's gender identity is different than what their body is, which
it's
is very
well
powerful.
Said. It's well said, and it's only really the past 10 years that anybody in this culture, in this society, being in North America, is even talking about that.
Yeah. Definitely. And talking about their rights. In Nevada, we just passed a law that is an anti-discriminatory law for these people. So they can go to the bathroom of their gender identity, and if they're harassed, they can actually sue. So we're finally creating protections for trans people, which they deserve, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I honestly believe that it's a chemical thing. It's a brain chemistry thing. That we just need to honor these people. They're people. We're all human, and we all struggle on a daily basis. So why can't we just empower each other instead of pull each other down? I try to teach them acceptance and cure a little bit of ignorance.
That's great. We're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you about college students, the things that they're facing. You just unearthed one of them, which is speaking about transgender, but also there's other things. I mean, I think that hopefully college students are more informed these days than not. It's a big job you're talking about here, and I want to talk about the extent of this education, like is it found on every college campus or what have you. So when we come back, we'll look at the scope of the degree in human sexuality, a doctorate in human sexuality, and how does it help people further reach in that. So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handler, and I'm having a conversation with Dr. Amanda Morgan, who's a health and sexuality educator at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And also, that's quite a place to be teaching sexuality. I mean, sex is everywhere. So we'll talk about that a little bit, too. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Lori talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Lori's CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Lori is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Lori sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn CD by Lori Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Lori Handlers, and today my guest is Dr. Amanda Morgan. And she has her doctorate in human sexuality, and she was talking about the kinds of issues that she teaches on the university level. She teaches about the body, the biology of the body, and then she teaches about the issues. Maybe that would be called the sociology of the body, you know, the sociology of sexuality. So what's happening on college campuses these days, and can people like you be found on college campuses? Like, how many are there? How many people who have doctorates in human sexuality are there in the world? Because it's a relatively new degree.
Yes, we do exist. We are everywhere. I know at University of Nevada, Reno, which is our sister school up in northern Nevada, I have a colleague who has the same degree as I do, and she teaches human sexuality. I know handfuls of college educators who have my kind of qualifications, or, you know, just like a master's in public health or something like that. As long as you have the health educator hat, you know, you can teach about sex. So usually you find this on most college campuses. There is some sort of human sexuality course. Sometimes it's required depending on what major you have. Sometimes it's just like a voluntary public service they provide. Because college is that time where kids are exploring the most. You know, they just got out of their parents. They're learning about themselves as a young adult. They're learning how to navigate alcohol and drugs and peer pressure and sexual situations at a whole different level than high school, because college is the place that you really grow a lot. Usually there's somebody there to teach the kids how to use condoms and how to, you know, protect themselves against sexually transmitted infections and how to have healthy relationships, which most kids do not get in high school. Most people do not get that kind of thing before they get to college. They might learn how to use a condom, or they might learn that they might get STDs from having sex, but quite often they don't get the skills about, like, how to navigate life as an adult, as a sexual being.
It's against the law in many states to educate high school students on sex. You aren't allowed anymore to bring condoms in as a health teacher, because it's said that because we're so conservative at this time right now, in American culture anyway, that schools could lose their federal funding if they actually distribute condoms and show students how to use this. So I have no idea what they're learning in sex ed. I think for the last 10 years we've been saying just say no.
Yeah. And the majority of high school kids are not good at saying no. The majority of kids when they leave high school are sexually active. So, you know, instead of giving them the skills to protect themselves, we're pretending like it's not happening.
Yeah, there's something so sick about that, but don't get me started. So there are youths, there are multiple youths, there are people who have degrees in public health and in human sexuality who are out there teaching people at least on a college level.
Yeah. About this. And the thing I love about college is I've got so much freedom. I can teach them about BDSM. I can bring in a dominatrix and have her talk to my class. I can do all these demonstrations with different types of barrier methods of dental dams and female condoms, and I can be very frank with my students. And they appreciate that. They like that I'm real with them. And at the end of the class, they come up to me and they go, I think I learned more in your class than I have my entire time at UNLV.
Right. Well, they learned what they needed to know instead of about art history.
Yes.
You know, I'm not putting art history down. I just picked that as a subject. Like, they're learning. They're actually,
well, art history can teach you a lot about sex, actually.
They're learning about real life that makes a difference to them and that matters to them and things that they have to know about to keep their life.
Yes. To stay healthy, to respect themselves, you know? It's a time where they're learning how to be adults, and they have to learn how to respect themselves and ask for what they want so they can get it.
That's great. Now, is there, well, before I ask you the next question, I want to tell you this quickie story that I used to teach Tantra classes at the University of Maryland, and I was not hired by the University of Maryland. I was actually hired by a sorority and fraternity that hooked up to provide this service of me coming in. And I was on the subway in New York years later, and I was just, you know, on the subway, and this couple, a very cute couple, got on the subway, and she banged into me by accident, and I said, you know, no worries, whatever. And then they just were smiling and smiling like they had never heard anyone say no worries before on the New York subway. I didn't know what they were smiling at. And all of a sudden, the guy said, that's her. She's the one who taught us about our sex life when we were in college. And then they looked at me and they said, we went to University of Maryland and you made the complete difference for us. You changed the way our lives were going to go. And that
wow.
felt so good to me. And, you know, to just be recognized in New York anyway. But it just, well, you just came back from New York. You know it. You know the chances of that happening there are nil. So
yep.
It was
the fish in the big stream.
Yeah, it was amazing to me to have them tell me. So we got off the subway and we just talked for 2 hours about what their experience of college was like, because when they met me, they were freshmen, and they had a really great experience of their bodies in college because of what I had come and brought them. So I imagine you're doing that tenfold for all these students that are in the college in Las Vegas. It's great what you're doing.
It warms my heart. It's the reason I get up in the morning. You know, I've worked other jobs where it's impossible to get out of bed. You feel like, ugh, you know, I don't want to go make coffee today, or I don't want to go deal with the customer service. But it's so amazing to get up and know that, like, I'm helping people, and then I'm having fun. And I make it very funny. My class is funny. And because I think with humor, you can release a lot of the shame and guilt. It's kind of cathartic when people laugh.
Yes.
So I make my class very funny, and it makes my kids feel more comfortable. They can laugh about things that they couldn't have talked about a month prior. So.
Right. Now, let's talk about becoming a sex educator. If someone's listening to this and they want to become a sex educator, and they don't have to be just in college. I mean, people could go back to school for this if they wanted to. Maybe they have the same calling or the same curiosity as you did, or they were the one in high school who found out stuff and told their friends. What do they do if they want to become a sex educator?
Well, there's multiple organizations that kind of give you guidance. There's ASECT, which is the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, and that's a group that gives certifications in sex therapy, sex education, counseling. They kind of give you references to different schools that teach this kind of stuff. Widener University on the East Coast is one. The Kinsey Institute specializes a bit in human sexuality, but it's kind of more research-based. It's more sex research than it is, like, education. And then the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality out of San Francisco is where I went, and they specialize in certificates in sex education and sexology and that kind of stuff. So you can really get really in-depth stuff that you would never even, you know, think about when it comes to physiology and sociology and anthropology. I learned a ton in school. So you can go around that way. You can get a master's in health education. There's bunches of programs out there that do that. Master's in just education. Or, in my case, there's a master's in public health. I love that because it gave me a very wide range of understanding when it came to disease prevention, investigation, and also how the environment influences our sexuality. My specialty was actually in environmental health, because environmental health and reproductive health go hand in hand, and people don't realize that if we live in a toxic world, we have toxic bodies, and that comes out in our sexuality as well as in our offspring. So it's very important to take care of ourselves and the planet.
That is so important. I think we're going to have to do another show about that, because I think that's so important to note. I know, for example, that a lot of people are taking hormones. With the advent of the birth control pill, hormones started going into people's bodies, and they pee those hormones out. And those hormones are going into the environment, and they're changing the whole environment. So I know that, and we also have a very toxic environment with plastics and other chemicals and things. So I'd love to get your take on that.
Yes, I'd love to come back and chat about it.
Yeah, it's very important stuff, and people really don't realize it. They just throw things out in the trash, or they throw condoms out and dress or whatever. There's so much that's going on here. There's so many levels to talk about that I think it's a really, really important topic, this whole public health aspect of it.
Definitely.
What do you see the future of sexuality and expression is going to look like?
I think the youth are a lot more liberal than their parents. I think the internet has opened Pandora's box, and I don't think we'll ever be able to close it. I know that a lot of my sexual exploration when I was younger was thanks to the internet, chat rooms and internet porn and erotica. You know, we have access to all this stuff at our fingertips that, you know, back in the day, you used to have to hunt for. You used to have to get a magazine, or you'd have to go to a movie theater. And now people can watch porn on their cell phones. So things have changed drastically due to technology. And I think that people are exploring stuff. They're connecting with people that share similar interests and whatnot at a much quicker level. And I think this is positive, and I think it's negative. I think it's great that we finally are like a closer community and people can explore. But I also think that we kind of have taken a lot of the soul out of sexuality. Sexuality used to be almost a spiritual thing. I mean, you're a Tonks teacher. It was spiritual. It is. Spiritual. I mean, I still experience sex as a spiritual thing. And I think a lot of young people have just, it's been made kind of commercial. So
yeah.
It's like, it's cool, but they don't realize that there's a depth to it in which you can explore yourself on a whole deeper level. And I think that the internet porn industry has kind of mimicked this like plastic disconnected sexuality that I think is kind of hurting people. I think it's limiting their ability to communicate, their ability to slow down and connect, you know, eye contact and, like, gentle touching. And it's kind of glorified this, like, put it in and bang away kind of sexuality. So I see a difference. I think that there's more erotic film coming out and that there is a little bit more of a seeking of connection that's happening in film. And hopefully that'll influence sexuality as well.
Right. Well, how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way to reach you if they have more questions?
Well, I have a blog, which is askdrdramanda.blogspot.com. And
okay.
I also have askdramanda@gmail.com. You can email me questions.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much for being my guest today, Amanda. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate what you're doing. And you are invited back soon to talk about the environment, the toxic environment, and what people are doing in their bodies, you know, and how that's affecting their sexuality and their offspring. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tune in next time when one of my guests will be a man talking about men's sexual selfishness, and my other guest will talk to us about tattooing nipples onto women's breasts after they've had reconstructive surgery after double radical mastectomy. Amazing. Signing off now for Sex and Happiness. This is Laurie Handlers.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to know.